But the custom was imposed, the same as that of reciting the rosary before dinner, and it drew the attention of the neighbors, who soon spread the rumor that the Buendias did not sit down to the table like other mortals, but had changed the act of eating into a kind of high mass. Even Úrsula's superstitions, with origins that came more from an inspiration of the moment than from tradition, came into conflict with those of Fernanda, who had inherited them from her parents and kept them defined and catalogued for every occasion. As long as Úrsula had full use of her faculties, some of the old customs survived, and the life of the family kept some quality of her impulsiveness. But when she lost her sight, and the weight of her years relegated her to a corner, the circle of rigidity begun by Fernanda from the moment she arrived finally closed completely, and no one but she determined the destiny of the family. The business in pastries and small candy animals that Santa Sofia de la Piedad had kept up because of Úrsula's wishes was considered an unworthy activity by Fernanda, and she lost no time in putting a stop to it. The doors of the house, wide open from dawn until bedtime, were closed during siesta time under the pretext that the sun heated up the bedrooms, and in the end, they were closed for good. The aloe branch and loaf of bread that had been hanging over the door since the days of the founding were replaced by a niche with the Sacred Heart of Jesus. Colonel Aureliano Buendía became aware somehow of those changes and foresaw their consequences. "We're becoming people of quality," he protested. "At this rate, we'll end up fighting against the conservative regime again, but this time to install a king in its place." Fernanda very tactfully tried not to cross his path. Within herself, she was bothered by his independent spirit, his resistance to all kinds of social rigidity. She was exasperated by his mugs of coffee at 5 in the morning, the disorder of his workshop, his frayed blanket, and his custom of sitting in the street door at dusk. But she had to tolerate that one loose piece in the family machinery because she was sure that the old colonel was an animal who had been tamed by the years and by disappointment, and who, in a burst of senile rebellion, was quite capable of uprooting the foundations of the house. When her husband decided to give their first son the name of his great-grandfather, she did not dare oppose him because she had been there only a year. But when the first daughter was born, she expressed her unreserved determination to name her Renata after her mother. Úrsula had decided to call her Remedios. After a tense argument, in which Aureliano II acted as the laughing go-between, they baptized her with the name Renata Remedios. But Fernanda went on calling her just Renata, while her husband's family and everyone in town called her Meme, a diminutive of Remedios. At first, Fernanda did not talk about her family, but in time, she began to idealize her father. She spoke of him at the table as an exceptional being who had renounced all forms of vanity and was on his way to becoming a saint. Aureliano II, startled at that unbridled glorification of his father-in-law, could not resist the temptation to make small jokes behind his wife's back. The rest of the family followed his example. Even Úrsula, who was extremely careful to preserve family harmony and who suffered in secret from the domestic friction, once allowed herself the liberty of saying that her little great-great-grandson had his pontifical future assured because he was the grandson of a saint and the son of a queen and a rustler. In spite of that conspiracy of smiles, the children became accustomed to think of their grandfather as a legendary being who wrote them pious verses in his letters and every Christmas sent them a box of gifts that barely fitted through the outside door. Actually, they were the last remains of his lordly inheritance. They used them to build an altar of life-size saints in the children's bedroom, saints with glass eyes that gave them a disquietingly lifelike look, whose artistically embroidered clothing was better than that worn by any inhabitant of Macondo. Little by little, the funereal splendor of the ancient and icy mansion was being transformed into the splendor of the House of Buendía. "They've already sent us the whole family cemetery," Aureliano II commented one day. "All we need now are the weeping willows and the tombstones." Although nothing ever arrived in the boxes that the children could play with, they would spend all year waiting for December, because after all, the antique and always unpredictable gifts were something new in the house. On the 10th Christmas, when little José Arcadio was getting ready to go to the seminary, the enormous box from their grandfather arrived earlier than usual, nailed tight and protected with pitch.